Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Milwaukee Film Festival is getting underway very, very soon in the city, and there's a really important and very moving film that we're going to talk about this hour. It concerns homelessness in the city of Milwaukee, and you would be amazed where homeless people live. Our guest this hour spent 5 years, she and the director of the film spent 5 years finding people who are homeless, homeless men in the city of Milwaukee, finding out why they are homeless, talking with people in the criminal justice system, judges, and also people who are with the Milwaukee Police Department in a homeless outreach program that is extremely effective. The film is 30 seconds away, Breaking the Cycle, and our guest this hour is Jessica Farrell. She's a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's currently a full-time producer at a Milwaukee ad agency. She has produced, directed, and edited her own films, a short documentary on the U.S. Postal Service, which aired at the 2013 Milwaukee Film Festival, and she is currently producing a feature documentary, Searching for Sparrows, which focuses on urbanization in a community in India. And we're delighted to have Jessica with us this hour. Thank you, Jessica, very much for being with us. You found people in all these locations, and some of them had pretty elaborate setups out trying to build homes out of absolutely nothing. There was a gentleman, and you can tell us his story, who guided you, became sort of your ambassador of the streets, who guided you to find where homeless people live in Milwaukee.
Yeah, one of our subjects, pretty much our main guy, is Harold Sloan. Harold Sloan is a fascinating character. There's so much to this individual because he lived on the streets of Milwaukee for over 20 years.
20 years?
20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had a lot of street smarts, you can say, you know. But it's crazy to hear, and you will really see what that means for someone like him and how that happens and how the cycle is really vicious. It's really encapsulating. So Harold Sloan ended up meeting the director of 30 Seconds Away, Faith Kohler, actually through one of the community programs here in our community at Repairs of the Breach. Mm-hmm. They met when she was volunteering there. And when she volunteers on the weekends, you know, she dresses in plain clothes. She's an everyday person. And so when people got to know her in that environment, they didn't realize at the time she was a federal agent. So when she started talking with them, and they were very real with her, and she's a very good listener, she's very good at interviews, and when they really started to get to know her, and she opened up to them as well and said, yeah, you know, you're talking about how the cops treat you, but the irony is I'm also a cop. So it's great to hear what you're saying. It's great to give me some perspective of your day in the life. And it really did change her perspective drastically on, you know, how things circulate for these people as a daily habit or as a daily form of survival mm-hmm. in our community. There is an area of our downtown that this community calls walking the trail because it is their daily trail of survival between the shelters, the food pantries, the food places such as St. Ben's Community Meal House. And that's the heartbreaking part, is that it's right here amongst all of us, mm-hmm. but so many people don't see it. And the real irony is it's completely encirculating our downtown around our county courthouse mm-hmm. and our jail. It's fascinating that it's literally existing right around there. And what she also came to realize with this kind of encapsulating circle is that, and Harold Sloan's an unbelievably heartbreaking example of this, is when all these years of citations from the police force add up, they add up to warrants. So if they get pulled over, you know, somebody's panhandling, and they run them, and they check them, they have this many citations on them, they have a warrant out for their arrest, they can be put in jail. Basically a debtor's prison. Yeah. Because they can't pay those citations.
How's a homeless person going to be able to pay for a $50 panhandling ticket, right?
Right, right. So Harold is unfortunately a perfect example of that over all these years. He cycled in and out of jail countless times. So the the thing that you start to realize as an individual like me who, you know, I'm not a criminal law student. I'm a film student from UWM. And for me to, you know, step back all these years and learn this new lay of the ground, you know, like I'm so removed from it, but
yes.
Now I'm so entrapped in it and I see it everywhere. And it's hard to see it everywhere. It's getting to that point where I'm so adamant that it's got to change that it floors me that it's still continuing. Mm-hmm. You know, after 5 years, I was like, you know, you're so hopeful that you're going to see change. But I think it's on the cusp of that, and I really hope it is. But it's just, there are so many aspects of it that relate to everyday individuals, such as people like me, I'm a film student, you know, or somebody even like Faith, who works a full-time job now at a corporate security center here. It does relate to each and every one of us, whether you commute to downtown and you park in a parking ramp or if you live downtown. It does affect you. And the number one way it affects you is your taxpayer dollars. It costs $103 a day to jail someone. And the numbers is mind-boggling even to me that this, after all this time, adds up. The greatest report I think I've been able to find on this, specific to our Milwaukee community, is by the Justice Initiative Institute. And from 2008 to 2013, they basically were graphing this information, and the report is called Cited in Milwaukee, the cost of unpaid municipal citations. And what that report specifically says is, over 5 years, 2008 to 2013, jailing people that cannot pay their fines has costed taxpayer dollars $10.2 million.
Whoa!
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
It's mind-boggling, really. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't think of that when you're crossing someone on the street who's having a hard time and suffering from homelessness. You won't think of that. Right. How could you put that all together? Right. And so what's really helped me in this time to learn all of this, you know, again, I'm not a law student, really to help me learn all this was Faith. Like, Faith Kohler really put the puzzle pieces together. She looked at the whole system. She looked at, you know, the perspective of a homeless individual, mm-hmm. and the perspective of a judge, and mm-hmm. how different and how entwined they are. And I think, you know, for someone like me that's has been completely outside of that situation, it really is fascinating to learn. And I think you can learn this in a 90-minute film. I think you can get a grasp of this, especially in our community, and how this does relate to each and every one of us.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with the people who are homeless. And this should be, I hope this clip is the one I'm thinking it is, a montage of people who are homeless. And there's a whole new dimension now with foreclosures and people in poverty, people losing their houses. You know, we're all one disaster away from some of these lives. So this is from the film, and then we'll talk about the individuals you met.
I chose to be irresponsible, and I just said, F it, went to the liquor store. So alcohol and drugs played a major role in that also, but it was the decision I made to go and get drunk, get high.
Where'd you sleep when you were sleeping outside?
I couldn't get in the Mission, Martin Luther King Park. You sleep right, pull the bench right between the trees. Have my blanket and everything, lay down and go to sleep.
You ever get bothered by the cops when you're sleeping outside?
Come on, shine a light on you, poke you. Tell you to get up or you're taking you to jail. And go somewhere. So get up, roll your stuff up, wobble away. You can't argue with them, they'll lock you up.
I ain't had too many problems here other than cops coming in once in a while, you know. But some of the cops were kind of good, you know. With you can stay, but, you know, clean the place up. We want it cleaned up. So we cleaned it up.
My mother was also homeless. Paranoid schizophrenic, crack addict. That was very hard for me to deal with. I caught 5 felonies. Ended up doing 2 years in prison.
There's 3 things that makes a person homeless. Alcohol and drug abuse, mental issues, and shit happens.
I think you know what he was saying there. We just can't play it on the air. Drug abuse, mental illness, and things happen to people, and a lot has been happening. The mental illness, the film focuses on this, too. When deinstitutionalization took place, you interviewed a number of people who have mental health issues and stopped taking medication. You can tell that they're having problems. We haven't figured that out yet, what to do with people who have these kinds of illnesses. They're on the streets, many of them.
Right, correct. And that's happening throughout the United States, and many cities are facing that issue. And I think when you look at what happened with the mental institution and how it was kind of a broad stroke, everyone was released. And I remember reading some of this, even in 2008 when the budgets were being cut, and how, you know, different communities were even cutting back more. And I was like, how can that help anyone? How is that sustainable? What is that going to do for these individuals and their families? Many families struggle because once they're over 18, you as a mother or a father cannot also force them into treatment. Mm-hmm. And as a judge says in the film, he cannot force them into treatment. So where does that leave our society? And I think we are still really trying to figure that out. And unfortunately, you know, our county jails, our federal jails, are reportedly filled with people suffering from mental illness. One of the largest jails in the United States, in Cook County, Illinois, just made their warden their psychologist. Their psychologist became their warden in the first time. And it's mind-boggling. And she has a beautiful article in the New York Times specifically talking about this. And she is a fascinating individual that's doing a lot and trying to repair all of this and get them to be stable, you know, and get them out of that cycle, I hope.
Yeah. And when you talk to people who were suffering, you talk to many in the film who were suffering from mental illness. Some said they just weren't taking medications anymore. Some continued to. Was there a way for them to get to medications? Did any go that route?
There is healthcare for the homeless, and that helps in a certain way. It helps where, you know, it's kind of like you can get over there if you can get a bus ticket, and you can get over there and get your medication. But the other thing to think about when you look at the homeless community, including in our city and many cities, is how they move. The transit, it's a transit population, but how they move is by their own 2 feet. You're lucky if you find a bike, you know, maybe they're stealing a bike to make it, you know, they're lucky to get a bus ticket. There's a few programs here that do give out bus tickets, but nothing lasts forever. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, for them to get all the way across town to the mental health complex, or for them to get to health care of the homeless, or for them to get to, you know, the county courthouse to clear their warrants, which many of them are, you know, nervous to do, it takes a long time. It could take a full day. You know, another thing that even the MPD homeless outreach team struggles with is trying to get these guys' IDs. So many of these guys do not even have an ID. So, you know, it takes a lot to get them first to trust working with an outreach worker or working with the MPD homeless outreach unit. And even to, you know, for Faith and I, it took a long time to build trust. They don't trust anybody anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much of society that has cast them to the side in many different ways, you know, whether it's abuse and physical abuse or mental abuse. So they just don't want to talk to you. They don't actually believe you're going to help them. It takes a long time to build trust and understanding and give them hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly did that in the film, because these people are incredibly genuine with you, I thought, just very genuine about you know, what their hopes are, who they are, and what their failures are, too. They were very forthcoming. You know, I was irresponsible. I walked away. I did mm-hmm. something that I shouldn't have done. This is interesting when you look at the problems that this city and other cities have faced with police, and particularly minority communities, and the Dontre Hamilton shooting in the city of Milwaukee, which was horrendous. This police department homeless outreach, these people are doing incredible work, offering, they really have a deep understanding of what people are going through. They seem to be caring officers. Is this mm-hmm. a new program? And tell us more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It started in 2010 in District 1 here in Milwaukee. And how it started here was because Captain Basinger and Karen Dubas, who is in the film and now retired. But Karen Dubas, they started this because they went to a conference in Texas where they learned about Houston doing this. And Houston is actually doing incredible work with this as well. So they learned that model at the conference, and they decided they wanted to bring that back to District 1 because they knew what was happening in this community. So the only way they could start it, though, was Dubas was managing it, kind of the lieutenant, and then two officers on the beat. That's it. That's all it started with. Mm. And thankfully, you know, in this time of, you know, over 5 years, it's grown. You know, went up to 40 trained officers, and now this last year went up to about 100 trained officers. So it's growing, and I'm grateful, very grateful to see that, because that is where some of the cycle starts. It does, where it starts with citations. If we stop giving them loitering tickets, if you stop giving them panhandling tickets, if you stop, you know, giving them trespassing tickets, all those tickets add up.
Right.
And so many of them, I mean, you know, if you're riding a bike without a proper license, that's a $63 ticket.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Ooh. And also, they're offering services. Do you need clothes?
Right.
We've got some food for you. Here's where, if you want to sleep somewhere, maybe mm-hmm. we'll even take you there.
Right. So that's the one thing that makes the model work. And one way our MPD team is actually talking to other MPD in the United States, such as New York Police Department has reached out to our MPD to ask, how are you doing this? And one way that it's really adamant to make it work is the community partners. So they've been through all the training and involved with meeting all of the community partners, such as the guest house, such as the repairs of the breach, such as the Hope House, such as, you know, there's so many different levels, whether it's a woman who's on the street who's there because of domestic abuse. You know, that's a much different category
right.
than a gentleman who's suffering addiction. So it's kind of a... It's every individual is a different story, and every individual is a different case, mm-hmm. and it's a different way of trying to help them. And basically, the MPD has to know that. They have to know if this guy can be referred to the veteran services. You know, they have to understand, and they have to really, you know, ask all these questions of these individuals and try to get to the bottom line of where could they find help and services. But, you know, the other thing is you can go that far. Many of these outreach workers, like we have a county outreach worker who is amazing right now, Eric, and he's out there every day working on this. It's amazing. Those people even, you know, you can be with someone for maybe, you know, 15 minutes and asking them and getting to know them. But it's still, in, you know, 15 minutes isn't enough time to build their trust for them to believe you, to go with them to a service.
Sure.
Many of them will refuse service. So when they refuse service, there is nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force any of them into treatment. So there's blankets and pillows and layers and, you know, cleaning supplies. But that's all it is. It's kind of a Band-Aid, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And the only thing that really is upon us in the United States, and it's growing, and we're so excited to see this, and there is many cities taking this on, is the Housing First model, because it completely flips 180 degrees from where we were all these years. All these years it's been go through all these hoops with all your treatment, get all your stars and brownie points, and if you get through that year of treatment, you're going to get housing and we can help you. But so many of the times they get through it and they get to their own housing and they don't know how to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. And after a year of treatment, for many of these individuals, as you'll see, is a year of treatment does not erase 30 years of addiction.
Absolutely. Right.
It's not enough. So right. The problem is you it's kind of like, and many of these organizations are funded to be, you know, we'll have treatment for you for 60 days. But after 60 days, what happens? And how can you be A-okay after 60 days? It's just not enough. It's not enough stability for these people. So the Housing First model, instead of going all the way through all this and then getting Housing First puts housing first. So they put them into, once they agree to it, they are put into public housing that is subsidized with the, thankfully with our community, we've put down $600,000 thanks to the city and the county joining forces. So with this money, it's housing vouchers. the outreach worker has to negotiate with landlords and everyone on that side of the line to take in this individual and tell them, we will be there every step of the day, every part of the way, to keep them stable, to keep them in this environment. If we can put them in this apartment, we will know where they are, how we can bring sources to them, how we can keep them stable. If they're out on the street, they're in an unstable environment. That's not going to help them receive their treatment for mental illness. That's not going to help them stay with on top of any of their, you know, warrants or loitering tickets.
Right.
It's not going to build anywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, a lot of it that I've come to realize is there's a stress to living on the street, like an unbelievable PTSD problem. It's just there's so much anxiety that you can't even sleep well. You know, you're sleeping maybe on a park bench and you have your shoes off to the side and you wake up and your shoes are stolen. It's there's so many variables that it just adds up every second. A lot of, like, even in this report I mentioned cited in Milwaukee, they even talk about how many of these individuals are cited multiple times within a day, whether it's jaywalking, whether it's trespassing because they're trying to stay warm at night, whether it's loitering tickets. You add that all up and you get 4 citations in a day, but you're homeless. How is that going to happen? So if you can put them in a stable environment during the day, cut back on these citations, cut back on the warrants, cut back on the jail time, cut back on the emergency room time, it all adds up for all of us. You know, how much cheaper is it to pay for someone's rent for $600 a month instead of $103 a day to jail them?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Let's talk about which seems to be a significant issue among the homeless, and I'm not sure what you do about this because addiction is one heck of a thing to break. And Harold, your person who took you, you had such hope for Harold, and he wound up dying of a heroin overdose, I believe, which must have really hit all of you pretty hard because there was so much promise in him and you felt like you were rooting for him. But this, you know, I wanted to escape. I had this bad stuff happening, or and the heroin addiction and the alcoholism, people drinking all day long, some who are homeless. You wonder how in the world to break that. It is such a significant problem in our society and a really huge, huge issue among the homeless, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. A lot of them, you'll see in the film, talk about just giving up.
Right.
You know, they just... they get to that point where everything feels to be collapsing, whether it was a divorce, whether it was the loss of a job, whether it was their alcoholism getting the better of them. It just kind of stockpiles. And it got to that point where they just let it all go. And a lot of that also for some of these individuals happens when they went to jail that first time and then they're back out. That's on their record. What do you got? What do you have left? And many of them don't have family, such as Tay was one of the people you played earlier, talking about generational homeless.
Yes.
Right. So his mother was homeless. So if he's going through this now, where could he possibly go? You know, where is a possible break in that for him? So it has so many different layers like that. The thing about addiction, and I think what, especially in Milwaukee, is, you know, the lay of our land here is really different. I'm not originally from Milwaukee. I moved here from Minneapolis and before that from North Dakota. It's such a different lay of the land here because of how the river breaks this and the interstate is built. And unfortunately, a lot of our assistants and public assistants and our some of the landlords that are even taking people in right now are not in the best neighborhoods. So when these individuals are suffering through this and trying to get beyond it, but then have to live in that environment where you're surrounded by it, it's not going to help the situation. And that it ended up basically happening to Harold. He was, the housing he was able to get after all of this, after years of community service, after years of fighting relapse, after years of going through this, the only housing he could get was right in that neighborhood. And he even said it. He was very worried about that. He was like, I don't know if I should go back to this neighborhood. I know there's too much history in this neighborhood. I don't want to live in this neighborhood, but he had to. That's all he could afford with his SSI. Mm-hmm. So there he goes back into that neighborhood, right where everything was stemmed from. Mm-hmm. And that, unfortunately, you know, many people do know that's happening and see that's happening. Jacob Kaur, who's in our film, specifically says that. You know, we have to release them from jail and put them back into the environment where this issue is stemming from. That's clearly the cycle.
Yeah.
That we haven't found a way to formally break, and that is why we do hope the Housing First model will be able to break it, because it's not going to just be, you know, a large public housing building. It's a scattered site model, which is so important. It's such a big factor in trying to break down those environments, because those environments are all they've known and all they've lived with and the only people they've known. And if you're put right back into it, but you're trying to pull away from it, you're not going to get out.
Right.
You're not.
And you also talk about, one of the judges in the film talks about, and you don't think about there, but for the grace of God go I, people who are teachers who have lost their jobs, people who used to have fairly good paying jobs who've lost their jobs, people who are on the streets now who had life going for them just fine, and with one major loss, anybody could be there. There's a whole new group of people, foreclosed homes, all the people who lost their homes who have no place to go. It's a new kind of homelessness, isn't
it? Right, and the judge talks about that because of these individuals that have citations and then come to his courtroom and, you know, say, you know, I used to be a teacher, but now I'm homeless. You know, how is, you know, and I think it's pretty hard for him to see a lot of that, and he has seen quite a bit of that. But beyond even the judge, the cops with MPD have specifically said that as well in the film. They've said, you know, we had somebody who has a PhD, but the alcoholism got the best of him. You know, we have somebody who used to work for Quad Graphics and just lost a job. So it's so many different layers. And, you know, it's not just somebody that it's not, there's so many different obstacles. It's not just generational homeless like Tay, where, yes, my mother was homeless and then I become homeless. But there's also people like Harold who just give up and are fighting an addiction and just can't handle the stress of other environments. I mean, he also suffered from mental illness. So when he was in shelters, he just couldn't handle that environment. With, you know, the mission, for instance, is about 200 men at night. 200 men in that one enclosed space together is not always a good mix. And many of them talk about that in the film, that I just can't go to a shelter. I can't exist in that environment. It's too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why many of them do choose to stay on the street. They choose to have their freedom on the street.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Jessica is our guest this hour. Jessica Farrell is producer of the film that will be a part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, a big part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, and there will be a public discussion of some of the issues that are found in the film. And it's really a powerful film that looks at the many reasons for homelessness. Jessica and the director of the film were able to, I think, get to all of the people they interviewed to be very honest and open and very natural about the reasons for homelessness and what the solutions are. They looked at the criminal justice system, the police department, those who are homeless, and so that's what the film is about. And the name of it is 30 Seconds Away, Breaking the Cycle. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before we go to phone calls, and we have many of them coming in, Jessica, I just want to play a few clips. This is, if you could identify, because I didn't write down his name as I was watching, somebody who was talking about the generations of homeless who we're seeing. Do you know who it is?
Yes, this would be Martin Kohler, and he is a criminal lawyer who's been in practice in Milwaukee since 1977.
Mm. And here's what he says.
We are probably at our fourth generation of welfare for people who are unemployed. And by that, if you look at this community in 1977 when I first started practicing, we probably had several hundred thousand factory jobs which no longer exist. And each generation has gotten progressively worse. Each generation has gotten younger and more violent. And as a result of that, you have homeless. As a result of that, you have an increase in the criminal justice system.
Let's go to phone calls for Jessica, and we start with Sabrina in Green Bay. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good. Well, I was just calling because I'm actually originally from Milwaukee, and I just wanted to talk about the homelessness. I think it's a great project that you guys are focusing on. Faith, I have been listening this whole time to the whole conversation, and I'm 24 now, and I've been homeless plenty of times in the city of Milwaukee, so I can relate to the subject greatly. And I just think that it's awesome that you guys are doing this project because there is a great need. A lot of people look aside and, you know, kind of, like you said, hash down and don't like paying attention to homeless people that are around. And any one of us could be homeless for all that matter, you know? Mm.
Sabrina, how did you become homeless?
I was homeless from the age of 16 until about 21. Mm. In the city of Milwaukee, I moved around probably 36 times my whole life, and I was in adult homeless shelters when I was 18, so I went through a lot of transitions.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing to hear you calling in and doing well.
Thank you. I'm doing amazing for myself, and, you know, for anybody that is out there that is homeless and that is listening to this program, you know, there is people to help. There is great resources, you know, and I know that a lot of people do suffer with a lot of different anxieties, depression, you know, even suicidal thoughts. And, you know, as people, as I am today, now that I'm, you know, stable in my life, I actually reach out to the people around me that I see. You know, if someone's having a bad day, I talk to them. I say, hey, you know, is there something that I can do? You know, do you need to make a phone call? I've helped homeless people. You know, I've found out people in my area now, because I live in Green Bay, and I found out that people, you know, that I worked with, coworkers, you know, that were even homeless, and they were sleeping in the, you know, the break rooms and stuff, and I would say, hey, you know, come over to my house and, you know, take a shower. You know, it's a very selfless act that people can do as well, too, so.
It's amazing that you've been able to really take that step and also, you know, pay it back. And it's amazing because I really honor that, because so many of our individuals are also doing that. And I think that is the change that we all could use, is looking at this and extending what we can extend. You know, maybe it's not $5, but maybe it's opening your door for a meal, or, you know, stopping at McDonald's and giving these people a meal, or giving them a bottle of water. It's giving them that support and comfort of talking to someone. So many of these people go through their day without talking to a soul. And what can that possibly do to us? We're talkative people. We're interactive people. And to be so isolated will only build the unfortunate, you know, isolation of addiction and everything. So I'm really grateful to hear, Sabrina, that you are reaching out to people that are also in your Green Bay community that are also suffering from homelessness, because you're completely right. It's in every size of community. It may not be as visible in Green Bay, but it's absolutely in Green Bay. It's absolutely in West Bend, and it's absolutely a growing concern in Madison as well.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sabrina, for your call. Patricia in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I wanted to support your guest, and thank you for the opportunity. I have a short experience. I worked for the Memphis Park Commission for many years and ran a community center. And, of course, a lot of folks who are homeless are going to be in the park system. They're going to be living in the golf courses or living in the parks. And this, of course, was the situation where I was. And I had a young man come in and tell me that he wanted to get off the streets. He was getting hurt. He was getting beat up. He was an alcoholic. He wanted to get off the streets. I called the government, the feds right away. They got him in for services right away. I got him financial support. My church found a place for him to live. They found him furniture. They furnished his whole apartment. So now he had all of those things. He had a safe place to stay. He had a decent apartment. I could hire him part time for where I work, and he had some income from the federal government. So I was his guardian for a year, and then I told him I would only do it for a year. And I did it, and 6 months later, he did die of his alcoholism.
Wow.
Even though we get all of the support we can and do the right thing, thing all the time, mm-hmm. it goes back to that addiction.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. And the trajectory you just described is hard for me to hear because it's very similar to Harold. And it's it is something that it's going to take the longest for us to break, probably, is how to truly help people suffering from years of addiction. And I am hopeful that the Housing First model can be that, but it still has to be consistent. It still has to be fighting the forms of isolation that you find in this community. So many of these people can just brighten up when you just come to visit them or bring them a meal. And some of these gentlemen that were living here in Milwaukee for a while that we were documenting, we would go see them every Saturday. We knew where they were camping. We'd bring them, you know, scarves, mittens, sandwiches, everything. And it would just brighten their day. They'd be excited to talk with us for hours. And they were just excited to talk with people outside of their circle, get a different understanding of the world, and find some other joy in a different situation. And so the hardest thing is, I definitely agree, is how far do you go? You know, right. you were there for a year, and that's amazing. But how far can one of us go? And I think that's the hardest thing Faith and I have also had to accept. You know, we are just two people, and we can't save them. It's going to take all of us in the community to come together mm-hmm. and really mm-hmm. put enough together to make it stable. You know.
And Patricia, what did you come away with after that experience? Were you disheartened? Did you feel that still it was worth the effort? What did you think?
I was brokenhearted and I was wiser. And at the time, you know, sometimes this whole homelessness issue takes on a glamorous kind of thing. I work with the homeless and I do all this stuff for the homeless, and it's not glamorous.
Oh, no.
It's I'm going to take a homeless person in, you know, for the night. Well, a lot of folks who are homeless don't have the best hygiene. I mean, and it's not this glamorous thing, I'm going to take this guy off the street. It's hard work. The other thing I do want to make a plug for, and that is working in the field of park and recs for so long, that's where I think a lot of our folks go, or a lot of our folks who are homeless go. And a lot of times the park and rec personnel have to be trained, get an education about, okay, we don't want to throw these people out of our parks. What are our alternatives? Mm-hmm.
Jessica.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that it affects so many different people. Like, exactly like MPD started to get trained, but it's not just MPD. It's all of us having to be trained on how to actually help these people and not just walk by or move them along. And that's a perfect example of how our parks, especially in your community and our community and nationally, our parks are overwhelmed with people. But where else can we help them? Where else can we take them? You know, so it's on our police officers and MPD and our social outreach workers, but it's also on us. If you see an individual, what can you do to help instead of just calling them to get another citation, which isn't going to help them, and it's just going to move them along and put them into a very tough cycle.
Tell me about their families. An interesting part of the film is where they talk about their children and know how old they are, or their parents, but many of them haven't seen them in 5 years or even more. Have they cut off family connections? If so, for some reason, or can families be of help? Are they?
I'll give one example, especially with Harold. Harold, who's been on the streets, you know, over 20 years, he liked to say it, you know, I was always asking them about reaching into the cookie jar. You know, I was always asking about bail money. And that can go only so far, even with a family member. You know, family is just as tapped as you are sometimes. You know, it's very infrequent to see, I would say, somebody jump in their family grouping of, you know, from middle class to higher up anymore. It's very much like, if you're raised in middle class, you're middle class. And I'm absolutely one of those examples as well. So it's hard to see that with Harold. You know, he did reach out, and he reached out so much that it became very difficult. And he actually has no more family. Well, his brothers are no longer in this community. He has the niece and nephews and people in this community, but they were actually so disconnected, they didn't know where to find him. And it took years for them to find him. And they ended up finding him in a shelter. But his brothers, you know, there's one in Chicago, there's one in Arkansas that's actually a sheriff, you know, there's, they definitely have a different, it's so many different things, because you know there's a bond, you know there's a bond,
right.
But it gets stretched for so mm-hmm. long that there's so much, you run out of being able to give.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens to family members, you know, also, you know, that are experiencing, you know, trying to help a loved one with schizophrenia or anything. You know, how far can you go, you know? And it's so unfortunate that it's come to that our families that are suffering through this can't find support to help them through it. And that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
It's a big part of it.
Thanks, Patricia, very much for your call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, from the film, this is a real heartening. I love the way these people find some of the homeless. I mean, it's amazing what they have to go through to find them and how they interact. Do you want to tell us, this is the Milwaukee Police Department. There are now 100 of these outreach.
Right, they're trained. There's 100 of them that are trained for these services, yeah. And that goes through all of our districts. It's not just District 1.
I see.
Yeah, so okay. It goes all in every single district now. There are officers trained for this situation. And, you know, I've been talking a lot about Milwaukee downtown and District 1, but it's every district.
Mm-hmm. And here's what some of the officers say about their work.
The homeless outreach team was started because I had gone to some training for a problem-oriented policing conference in Arlington, Texas, and what I took away from that was what I brought back to District Number 1 and what we have implemented with absolutely fabulous police officers.
Work with police officers taking calls for service that deal with behavioral emergencies, figure out what's going on with them and how we can assist them. So those calls range from anything from doing a welfare check. Maybe a family member hasn't seen a person in a number of days and they're concerned because they've been depressed or have some kind of mental illness and have been off their medications, to somebody on the edge of a bridge or barricaded in a room threatening to kill themselves. I help provide scene safety and use my medical background to try to rule out medical causes for their behavior, their situation. I am able to carry a bunch of extra equipment. We have actually a whole closet full of things like winter jackets, scarves, mittens, hats. Here's some stuff to help you meet your basic needs. Here's access to shelter resources. Let me give you a ride to the shelter, because I know it's a long way across town and it's 20 below out. The department administration is just kind of taking out all the stops in my job so that I can just go and help people. It's just amazing.
From the film 30 Seconds Away, Breaking the Cycle, it premieres at the Milwaukee Film Festival next Tuesday at 6:30 at the Oriental Theater, and will be shown again Friday, October 2nd. And that will be at the Time Cinema and the Avalon Bayview on Tuesday, October 6th at 9:45 p.m. Get a schedule, go online and you get the schedule of all of the films, and there are many terrific ones. All right, let's go to a couple more phone calls. We have time for them. 800-486-8655. Actually, let's go to Rebecca first on Facebook. What about those people who hold up the signs by the off-ramps, and you do have somebody who makes the signs in your film? Will work for food. Are those a scam? Everyone says those are a scam. I always give them something just in case. What's the consensus on that?
Yeah, that is, again, a case by case. And the police are actually very active on that situation, because there are some that are scams. And that is the unfortunate thing, because it hurts all the rest. There are some, the most particular mentioned and being charted right now is the McKinley ramp exit here in Milwaukee. That, you know, has many people being shown to be dropped off and doing it to make extra cash.
Mm.
And that is the unfortunate situation. In situations like that, I do recommend just carrying extra water bottles, giving out water, giving out extra snacks, whether it's pretzels or a sandwich. And there's many times, even just driving downtown between my day-to-day commute and work, where I have an extra half of my sandwich and I'll just give them that, or mm-hmm. try to talk with them and give them that for a minute. But there are some, you know, the hardest thing to see is how that impacts the rest of them. And it's unfortunate, because for me, and then studying this now for over these years, I can tell when somebody is really suffering. And there's many ways you can tell, whether it's how they hold themselves, whether how they interact with you, whether they're suffering from mental illness, whether it's their clothing and their shoes, whether it's how they write their sign. It's all of these different variables where you can start to see how the individual is really maintaining themselves. And there was one particular for me in the last few weeks that will forever stick with me. I was driving up back to work. I work north of town a little bit, and I was dealing with traffic, so I took an exit to try to take the back roads a little bit. And I took the Locust Street exit off of 94, and there was a young woman standing there with a sign, and there was no doubt in my mind she was absolutely homeless. She was actually standing there as confidently as she could, but she was crying. And it's so hard to see that, because, you know, at the end of that, all I could do was pull over and give half my sandwich and try to refer her to resources. But, you know, I think she was just in so much stress that it's hard to hear, like, this is a way out, because it's hard to believe that's a way out when you're in it, you know. Mm-hmm. So there are people that absolutely are on the side of the roads and truly suffering. Yeah. And then there are people that are abusing it.
Yeah. An anonymous caller. Hi.
Yes, thanks to the movie. I was homeless for 10 years, and I lived in the suburbs because I knew that I could get away with a little bit more hiding in public view. And no one talked to me for 10 years. I wasn't mentally ill, and I have no addiction. I just was the victim of white-collar crime and lost everything. And then I would work, and then I would be always surprised. I would work so hard, and then the man I would work for would want a favor to get paid. And it puts you behind because you worked hard that day. And, you know, when you live in your car, you got to have specific things. I was very meticulous in how I organized my car and how I had to hide from the police, because the police in the wealthy area I was in wanted favors from me all the time. And if I didn't go to high school with the judge, he would have believed the police. And the police were always harassing me, calling me names and spitting on me. And, you know, it really gets to you after a while. You just got to keep your head. And finally, a nurse at the Lake Area Free Clinic in Oconomowoc, she finally realized that, you know, I was having a little bit of stress and I wasn't eating, and she got me so much help. You know, it takes one person, because you don't ask anybody for anything because you're afraid of what they'll do to you. And they do so many bad things to you when you're homeless. You think the Hebron House or something is going to be safe, but they just, the people do so many things. They steal, and they pretend they're your friend, and you just are completely in a bad spot, so you got to remove yourself, you know, and try to hide.
Are things better for you now? Have they stabilized?
Yeah, I got cancer so bad that, you know, the people at Freighter just said I had 2 weeks to live, and they gave me enough morphine and things to kill myself, and I didn't believe them because I'm stubborn, and I just kept working and saving and staying in my car and went through chemo, mm-hmm. and I'm alive. I'm still alive 3 years later, and I saved up enough to buy a cabin.
Oh, all right. Good. It is good. Thank you for your call. It can happen to anybody, right?
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience, because there's so many different variables and how it just adds up really fast. And one of the police officers on our film says it pretty well. He says, disaster happens fast and recovery happens really slow.
Jessica Farrell, producer of the film, thank you for being with us. 30 Seconds Away, Breaking the Cycle is the name of the film. Thanks to KP Whaley and Scotty Myers for on-air production. We'll be with you again tomorrow. First hour, we'll be talking about Pope Francis and his address to Congress, which will air tomorrow at 9 a.m.